Thanks for being with us today. It's Todd Zwillich. Let's go to Saudi Arabia now, where a surprising sweep over the weekend ended in the arrest of one of the world's richest men and several members of the Saudi royal family. Billionaire investor Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal owns major stakes in companies like Citigroup and Twitter. He was arrested along with nearly a dozen Saudi princes and several current and former ministers. Meanwhile, one Saudi prince died when his helicopter crashed near the border with Yemen, but the kingdom's state-owned media calls that an unrelated event. The newly appointed Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, son of the king, ordered these arrests as part of what he's calling a crackdown on corruption. Still, the government has not announced any formal charges here. Jared Kushner, the White House senior advisor and son-in-law of President Trump, has just ended a series of high-level meetings with the Saudis. David Kirkpatrick is an international correspondent with the New York Times based in Cairo. David, thanks for coming back.
It's my pleasure.
What do we know about these arrests in Saudi Arabia right now?
We don't know as much as we'd like. The state-owned Al Arabiya News Network has said there were 11 princes arrested, many former top ministers. I think a total of 38 people in addition to the princes were arrested. There are reports out of Saudi Arabia this morning on Monday of further arrests. Those who have been detained have apparently all been housed inside the Ritz-Carlton Riyadh, which has been turned into a kind of super high-end prison with the phones and the internet shut off.
So that's medium security, maximum luxury prison.
Yeah, I would say that's a good way to put it. The most important figure here who's been arrested is Prince bin Taib bin Abdulaziz. He was the head of the National Guard, which was the last one of the three main Saudi security services, which was not yet under the effective control of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Mohammed bin Salman has, with this blitz of arrests, not only cowed the business elite, but he has established full control over all of the armed forces of Saudi Arabia. And that gives him a really unique degree of control over the real power inside the kingdom that we haven't seen since its sort of modern founding in 1932.
So what you're suggesting then, David, is a pattern that maybe less fits the claim of an anti-corruption sweep and more one that fits the political motives of the crown prince and his desire to focus power on himself in the kingdom.
Well, for sure, he has targeted some people who have a kind of stink of corruption around them. But he certainly has not targeted everybody in Saudi Arabia who's got the stink of corruption around them. That it would be a long job and it would go on forever. He's also targeted rival powers within the kingdom. And when you're thinking about policing corruption, you're thinking about enforcing the rule of law. You envision openness, public trials, evidence, you know, that kind of thing. That's not this. This is more eeny, meeny, miny, mo. I'm going to grab some people in the middle of the night with no due process whatsoever, which is not what we in the West expect when we think of sort of clean government reforms.
And one of the other people that got caught by the toe in this game, David, Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, one of the richest men in the world, billionaire investor from Saudi Arabia, a powerful financial force in his own right. And I think a lot of people were surprised that he was swept up.
Yes, because he is both rich and internationally visible and also apolitical. So he's not an obvious target. You know, there's a lot of reports of Saudi businessmen thinking of moving their money out of the kingdom because they were nervous about Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's reforms. The kingdom's economy has been shrinking. It's been implementing austerity measures to try to adjust to the low oil price. And the gambit is that over time, this kind of shrinkage in the public sector will be made up for by attracting foreign investment. We don't know when that's going to happen or how it's going to work. These moves are probably not going to help with that. All in all, it's left private investors a little shaky and eager to take their money out of the country where it might be safer. There's some speculation that Prince Al-Waleed bin Talal, the richest man in Saudi Arabia and one of the richest men in the world, was also making those kinds of moves. So there may be an element of this which is about trying to use brute force to prevent capital flight.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about how foreign investors may be interpreting this, because Mohammed bin Salman has been one of the prime drivers behind moves in Saudi Arabia, as we understand it, to liberalize the economy a bit, get it away from dependence on oil, try to attract new and different types of investors to the kingdom. But you're saying, David, that this is going to spook a lot of those foreign investors and make them maybe not want to put their money in.
Yeah, I think that's in the short term, that's certainly the case. I mean, supporters of Mohammed bin Salman and someone with as much money as him will always have some supporters will say, look, in the long run, this is good because there's one man who controls the whole kingdom and no one can get in his way. And so his actions will be predictable and investors will like that. Maybe, but that's down the road. In the short run, this feels arbitrary. There's no transparency. It's not the rule of law. And I think there's little doubt that right now it has mostly spooked investors rather than attracted them.
The Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has also been behind other policies in Saudi Arabia, really is the right hand of the king here. Escalation of the war with Yemen, the conflict with Qatar over the summer that we covered, and all of the consternation that caused the United States and the State Department. The overall strategy here, David, is it clear?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it's clear that he's a man in a hurry. It's clear that he does not like Iran and its influence. And it's clear that he's laid out a vision of Saudi Arabia that looks like a giant United Arab Emirates. Not much progress in the way of political freedom, but more sort of modernity in social mores and private enterprise. But to get there, you know, he's picking fights with everybody. He's squaring off against the business elite in Saudi Arabia, which is accustomed to a lot of state spending and largesse or even corruption. He's squaring off against the religious police and the conservative religious establishment inside the kingdom. He's taking on Iranian proxies in Yemen, or people, the Houthis, who he believes are Iranian proxies. So he's got a lot of fights going in every direction at once. And that lends a certain incoherence to it. Certainly it's not the way Saudi Arabia has behaved in the past. It was a staid kingdom, as we often report.
David Kirkpatrick, international correspondent with the New York Times. David, good to have you back.
It's a pleasure.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.